You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Eight o'clock Saturday morning. That is the Outdoor Living Hour here at Rosie on the House. Warm one today. It was already 92 when I got my vehicle this morning, and that was at 5:30.
It was very warm.
So, I think I just, if I could find a way to preserve watermelon rind, that would make a great insulator, because even on a morning that starts at 92 degrees, you wait till the heat of the day, walk out there and cut out the, open a watermelon, it's still going to be cold inside.
It will be. This is Julie with Arizona Farm Bureau. I think, Romy, you've come up with the latest Rosie on the House invention for all of your
we need
home
a
improvement
for watermelon rind.
Yeah. Awesome.
And Julie, with the Arizona Farm Bureau, melons, big harvest right now. We are, the state is a big producer for watermelons, and you brought a special guest. Charlie, are you a melon expert or melon head?
I wouldn't call myself an expert by any means, but we grow a little bit of them. Yeah.
Julie was saying last night about the number of pounds y'all will ship a day in full harvest, but she's like, that can't be right. I'm going to have to ask him tomorrow.
We're pushing somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million pounds a day.
A day.
Yeah.
You were right, Julie. 2 million pounds of melons per day. Yeah.
And they started doing that in June, right?
Yeah. Well, we're trying to come off a little earlier, more like the end of May. But yeah, I think we started this year about the 1st of June. The weather kind of pushed us back a bit. But yeah, we're in full swing now. And we had our 4th of July pull. And now we're hoping to wind down in the next 10 days or so.
Now, how long? Okay, next 10 days.
The volume, anyway. So mm-hmm. The volume will wind down. We'll go on until about the 1st of August, somewhere around there.
And where do 2 million pounds of melons make their way to? Is that all consumed here locally?
I wish it was. But our focus really is the local market. We take a lot of pride in being the local producer. But with the watermelon deal, it goes all directions. We follow Mexico, and then when Mexico wraps up, we come into season for basically the month of June is our big window. And so our watermelons are going into California, they're going up to Canada, they're going all over the United States, but a lot of them do stay here.
And what else do y'all what kind of melons are we producing?
So we're producing watermelons, and then we also do the mini personal melons. That's kind of a smaller market, and we do those organically as well.
What's a personal melon?
So yeah.
Don't you name it and everything.
Yeah, it's a small size where it's the size of a cantaloupe or so, and they call it a personal melon because I imagine you could sit down and consume it all yourself.
I can finish a big one by myself.
Yeah,
it's not on a hot day, and it's not really filling. It's very refreshing.
Right. No, your comment earlier about cutting a watermelon open and it's 95 degrees outside and it's cold in the middle. That's very true. It's very refreshing to go out there in the morning and cut those.
Now, when did we plant?
So we start transplant everything, and we'll start about the middle third week of February, in order to come off by the third week of May and 1st of June.
And when you say transplant, so you start everything on in greenhouses and then you bring it out to the field?
We do. We'll drop seed into the greenhouses. They'll grow the plant up to it's probably 3 or 4 inches high or so, and then ship it up to us, and then we go through and have a semi-automated transplanter that with people on it that are dropping these plugs into the machine and drops them into the ground, spaces them out.
And how many plugs does it take to then 5 months later produce 2 million pounds a day?
Oh, I'd have to do a little math on that one, but we're growing about almost 1,200 acres of watermelons, and we have 30,000 or so per acre. So it adds up pretty quick.
And where are your growing fields?
So our watermelon program is mainly based on the west side of the West Valley, kind of along Loop 303, and then a little bit in the Tolleson area as well.
So, Romy, I forgot to warn Charlie that you would ask a numbers question, but I think he handled that one really well. And the other fun thing, Charlie Montgomery, with Russo Farms that I would love for you to share. So you thought you were going to get away from watermelons. What's your story growing up?
Yeah. So I actually started in the watermelon deal about the age of 9. My mom worked for a local grower and as her office manager. And so she'd bring me in. I think it's more for daycare purposes that she made me work in the summer times.
That was our situation, too, on the farm.
Yeah. So ever since I was 9 till I was 18, I was shipping watermelons and swore I'd never do it again. Went to college, went down to U of A, got an ag resource economics degree and came back. And sure enough, not soon thereafter, I was back in the watermelon world. But I'm happy to be there.
It grows on you.
Yeah,
literally. Pun intended. Yeah.
I'm going to call him the watermelon man.
Now, what kind of water volume does that take? Because I mean, you cut it open and it's very wet, it's very juicy. Is there any statistics on how many drops of water, gallons per water, that per melon?
I don't have those. We work pretty hard to obviously be efficient with our water. We grow all of our watermelons on drip. Used to be pretty common to furrow irrigate. But we found that drip works really well, so we'll put in subsurface drip tape, and so we're consuming far less water for the amount of watermelons you're really producing.
I read one of the statistics is that it's 92% water. An average size watermelon is 92% of it is water.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And how is it classified as both a fruit and the vegetable? Is it the sweet stuff inside the fruit that everyone eats, and the rinds, the vegetable that no one wants.
Right. So every fruit, the biggest identifier is the seeds are inside the actual fruit. But in this case, it gets the special designation because you can take the rind. Some people will chop up and stir fry the rind. You can also pickle the rind. You mentioned that earlier. There's all sorts of things that you can do with the rind to treat it like a vegetable. But of course, we love the center part of it, the fruit.
That's chicken feed.
Yeah.
Our rind is
it is also chicken feed. I was trying to be sophisticated here with my connoisseur recipes and stuff like that, which, by the way, on Fill Your Plate, we have two watermelon recipes. You can just search in recipes by watermelon. And the other Fill Your Plate feature is our blog. If you search watermelons on the blog, up will pop a boatload of articles. So there's all sorts of things that we're trying to promote with watermelons, and Russo Farms, one of our best growers of them, it's a pretty neat feature.
How many different varieties? The couple times we've done melons, you go to select from the seeds at the nursery, and you have a lot of options.
There is. The variety really depends on the region that you're in. We've got a go-to variety that we've depended on, but they're constantly evolving, so you're constantly trialing new varieties. It's always nice when you find that one that can be your workhorse, though, and have a small percentage on the side that you're getting ready for the next evolution of that strain or that variety.
And how do you get a seedless watermelon? I mean, who's sitting there sucking the seeds out and putting it all back together and packaging for the consumer?
So the way it's always been told me is the seedless is the 13th generation in the breeding process, which creates a sterile melon. So there's no black seeds in it. So it actually it's a female plant. So in order to pollinate, you need a male plant. So there's pollinators that we put in the field. We interplant in the field, and those are the males, and they produce a small gourd like melon with black seeds in it. We don't harvest those. There's no need to get those. We get plenty of the good stuff.
And Romy, to your numbers point, there's 200 to 300 different varieties of watermelons grown in the United States, but globally they say that number jumps to 1,200. So watermelon is grown all over the world, but we grow it really good here in Arizona.
And July is National Melon Month. There is a pumpkin contest where every year at the Santa Rosa's Heirloom Seed Festival, they have a pumpkin weighing contest. There's one here in Arizona. There's the Giant Pumpkin Growing Association. Do y'all have a giant watermelon contest?
We don't. Maybe we should. It'd be kind of a fun deal to have, yeah.
Well, we'll have to start a giant watermelon. Or maybe it's just too much fun to do the watermelon chucking.
Can do that because with the seedless, we can't do seed spinning competitions anymore. So
no, that takes it out. Well, you can go to the – have you been to the melon chucking contest?
I haven't, no.
What used to be Young's Farm, now Mortimer's Family Farm, they have a watermelon chucking.
Nice.
Have you taken the kids?
We haven't. We've never made that event. But I hear that occasionally the innocent bystander four-legged cow may get splattered.
False victim.
Okay. All right. We're joined with Julie Murphy of the Arizona Farm Bureau talking watermelons. And with you is Charlie from Russo Farm.
Russo Farming Company, yes.
Russo Farming Company. Here at Rosie on the House, it's the first Saturday of the month. We bring in Julie to talk different departments of agriculture in Arizona. It's a $23 billion industry to the state, and surprisingly enough, Arizona has a lot of number ones when we talk about, you were talking earlier, number of tribal.
Yes, the ag census is being conducted right now, and it winds down this year, and all the numbers will be released. One of our number one things we get to claim is we have the most Native American farms here in the state of Arizona, and we're also number one with women as primary owners of farms. Most of that is coming from the Navajo tribe because they're a matriarchal culture. So it's a pretty neat thing for us to be able to say we're number one about those things, and that's all coming from the USDA Census of Agriculture, which, by the way, my farmers and ranchers listening today, if you haven't filled out your survey, please do, because the USDA uses those numbers to tell our great story.
And that's due when?
I think it's winding down in the next month or two, and then they compile all that data, and that's how they're able to share some of the most interesting things that we can share. The agriculture census only takes place every 5 years. So, again, we're counting, we're gathering the data now, and they will release some of these exciting numbers in 2019.